Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I always like to review a little bit from podcast to podcast. And last week, we were actually looking at Israel's latest peace partner, that is Sudan, and the inherent instability which we find in many areas of the Middle East and the Mediterranean Sea, and even in, of course, Northern Africa, where Sudan is. But you know what we know about the Middle East and the Mediterranean Sea areas, as well as Sudan, is that they are unstable, fluid situations, fragile situations, you might say, particularly this peace that Sudan has now joined in with Israel. And not just because of that black gold matters, as I like to term it, that is gas and oil reserves that that people are fighting over and having problems trying to figure out who owns what. And there's just a whole lot of issue going on with oil and natural gas in different areas around there. But so not just because of that, you know, and I've looked at some of the things last week, why there is this instability, particularly in Sudan. But as I mentioned last week, we also know, what we also know is that God has made it clear in his prophetic word about Israel's future. And part of their future, we can see in Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39 of God's deliverance from at the hands of the coalition headed by Russia and several other nations, which is going to be taking place sometime in the future. We don't know exactly when. We certainly can't put a set any dates. We don't do that for sure. But anyway, this is just a bit of a review. And now let's look at some of the examples of instability in recent decades, because instability is not new in the Middle East, of course, or in lots of places in the world. But again, we look at what's taking place concerning Israel and the nations pertaining to Israel. It wasn't that long ago, some decades ago, a few decades back, that Persia, who goes by the name of Iran these days, of course, used to be friends with both the U.S. and Israel. The Shah of Iran, of course, was in Iran. And actually, Iran and Israel were friendly before the 1979 Iran, or the Iranian Revolution. The, you know, the Shiite Revolution, because, of course, they believe in the Shia form of Islam. The radical Islam of Khomeini replaced the Shah of Iran. And so, you know, since that time, since after 1979, there's been hostility ever since. And then we can also look at Turkey. Now, Turkey's a nation where I've actually visited Turkey twice. I've also visited Israel twice. And I remember from my trips in both of those countries at the time that they were actually on friendly terms. In fact, I would almost say, in my estimation, that Turkey was probably the friendliest Muslim nation towards Israel at the time. As I traveled in both countries, I would I was reading some of the newspapers that were in English, or international papers, of course, that I could read in English, but that were close to what was taking place in those countries. And I remember reading about joint military drills between Turkey and Israel, that they were, you know, ready to actually help each other and help make each other's military stronger by working together and all. And it's no longer that way. In fact, when I went, I remember there were pictures everywhere of a man named Ataturk. And Ataturk, of course, was very popular. He had passed away, I think, sometimes before I got there. But, you know, he had brought a certain form of secularization to Turkey, to where they maintained both their Islamic religion, but they enjoyed their secularism. Sort of an anomaly, I suppose. But very nice people when I were there, as well as in Israel, of course. A lot of really nice people, and a lot of really nice people in Turkey. I've been to four Muslim countries, by the way, and Turkey and Jordan were my two favorites, and Egypt and Morocco were my two least favorites. But Turkey and Egypt were so far apart in how they dealt with tourists, and it was just incredible. But anyway, it's too bad, because my experiences in Turkey and the experiences of Turkey in the good old days of Ataturk are gone now that the Erdogan, the tyrant, is running that country. And then, of course, we can look back to the USSR, which now is known as Russia. This was a superpower. They've been weakened over the years, but they're still a major player in the area and in the future. And I also, by the way, had the opportunity to go to Russia, and I brought some. This was right after communism was no longer happening there. You know, they were experiencing some freedom, and I was able to bring some Christian books, and got to speak at a missionary, you know, at a missions there in the area with one of the missionaries. And it was interesting, because when I was there, I guess word got around to some of the Christian Russian people there that, of course, I had a belief and a view of Bible prophecy, which didn't look real well, you know, for the future of Russia. And I remember some guy scoffing at the idea that Russia was going to invade Israel and all that. Well, you have to understand, this was back when Russia had just been, they just collapsed, you know, because of Reagan's strong stance, and I suppose the Pope's at the time, some of his influence or whatever. But and that's I'm not giving kudos to the Pope or to the Catholic Church by any means, but just some of the different things that were affecting what was going on in Russia at the time. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. This guy scoffed at the idea that Russia might invade Israel, sort of like people might scoff now that Sudan might also help in this invasion, because, of course, now they're at peace with Israel. Anyway, I digress, or actually I should move forward, I should say. And that's the fourth point that I was going to say about pertaining to examples of instability in recent decades. And what do we make of Sudan, you know? So once again, I would say we know what God has made clear in his prophetic word. In Ezekiel 38, of course, there's the list of the invading nations that will one day be part of that coalition, and Sudan will be one of them. We don't know when. Anyway, so I would like to now move to an article in Israel Unwired by Micah Geffen. I quote this individual fairly often. They have some good articles. And this was in October 27th, 2020. The title of the article is War Coming to Israel Despite Peace Deals Are Because of Them. It says, when one looks back at what triggered the next Israeli war, it will ironically be because of the current spat of peace deals with Sunni Arab states. Peace is, of course, good, and these deals are necessary, but the Iranian regime is now backed up against the wall because of them. Every new deal that is signed between a Sunni Arab state and Israel unifies the anti-Iranian coalition and weakens Tehran's hand, Tehran being the capital of Iran. The latest peace deal with Sudan is especially damaging to Iran, as it cements the end of their ability to use Sudan as an arms transfer to Hamas and Hezbollah, these terrorist organizations. In fact, it also ends Iran's unabated use of the Red Sea to harm other Sunni countries. Of course, the Red Sea there borders Sudan. While Sudan had already moved into Saudi Arabia's circle, a peace deal with Israel cements that new alliance even further, damaging Iran's capabilities in the region. And I might add, we shall see what takes place in the U.S. government's view towards Iran if, anyway, I won't say anything else. I'm going to move on. We shall see. We will see a lot of things down the road, I'm sure, if the Lord tarries, if the Lord doesn't take his church home, those of us who know him. Now, again, I think that this peace with Sudan will probably, well, will be a false peace one way or the other, okay? I'll put it that way. It may be a peace and then it goes away. But Anyway, I think I've belabored that point enough. I want to move to, again, a book by Mark Hitchcock that I mentioned last week's podcast from 2010, The Amazing Claims of Bible Prophecy, and Middle East Peace Predicted 2,500 Years Ago. That's the title for that chapter. And Mr. Hitchcock writes, concerning the coming peace, or the false peace that's brokered by the Antichrist with Israel, 50 years of failure. The United States, the Soviet Union, the United Nations, and various European nations have all made various attempts to bring peace to the Middle East and failed. In the United States, president after president, secretary of state after secretary of state have failed to make any real lasting headway. The United States has been able to broker peace treaties between Israel and two of her neighbors, Egypt and Jordan. Again, this was back in 2010. This was before UAE, Iran, and Sudan. But both of those nations continue to harbor deep hatred towards Israel and consistently side with other Arab nations in issues involving conflict with Israel. So once again, even those pieces, or the peace with those two countries, is tenuous at best. He goes down the page and says, will there ever be peace in the Middle East? Peace is coming. The peace treaty that the Antichrist brokers with Israel is one of the most important markers of the end times. The Antichrist will bring a false temporary peace, but for a while it will look like the world's dream for peace in the Middle East will have finally come to fruition. The two main Old Testament passages that indicate that there will be some kind of peace settlement for Israel at the beginning of the tribulation are Daniel 9:27 and Ezekiel 38:8. He says, I believe that both of these passages refer to the same peace treaty. First, Daniel 9:27 says, he, or the Antichrist, will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week, that is 7 years, but in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate. This passage teaches us at least five key things about this future peace treaty. One, it will be between Israel and the Antichrist and will almost certainly involve others. This seems to indicate that Europe in its final form, or in other words, like the revived Roman Empire, will be the key player. It will begin or start the seven-year tribulation. It will be a firm covenant. This may indicate it will initially be forced or compelled. It will eventually give Jews the right to offer sacrifices in a rebuilt temple. This means a Jewish temple must once again be built. The Antichrist, number five, will break the treaty at its halfway point in one of the great double crosses of all times. Charles Dyer, a respected prophecy teacher and author, summarizes the nature of this covenant. What is this covenant that the Antichrist will make with Israel? Daniel does not specify its content, but he does indicate that it will extend for 7 years. During the first half of this time, Israel feels at peace and secure, so the covenant must provide some guarantee for Israel's national security. Very likely, the covenant will allow Israel to be at peace with her Arab neighbors. One result of the covenant is that Israel will be allowed to rebuild her temple in Jerusalem. The second Old Testament text, that speaks of Israel's end-time peace agreement is Ezekiel 38:8, which says that in the latter years, Israel will be living securely, all of them. Then Ezekiel 38:11 says that Israel will be at rest and will live securely. According to Ezekiel, there will be a time in the latter years when the regathered people of Israel will live in a time of great peace and prosperity. During this time, when Israel had let down her guard, a coalition of nations led by Russia and Iran will invade the land. Russia, Iran, and Turkey, I might add. I'm just adding my two cents. And God will wipe out the invaders. We will look at that in more detail in chapter 19. Of course, we won't look at that in this book. But it's safe to say that what we see today and have witnessed over the last few decades of the Middle East peace process points towards an eventual treaty that will kickstart the final 7 years of this age. And of course, when he mentions a coalition of nations led by Russia and Iran, that's a coalition, and that's why I threw in Turkey, because Sudan and others obviously will be there. How much longer? What form will the coming peace settlement take? In view of the many surprises that continue to arise in the Middle East, it is hazardous to guess what such a settlement might look like. And then further down the page, he says, perhaps Israel's enemies will accept a peace treaty to gain a temporary tactical advantage in preparation for further war against Israel, as seen as Ezekiel 38 and 39. Sort of reminds me of the Yom Kippur War, where Israel thought that they could, celebrate this religious holiday, and their guard was down there, and of course, when they were attacked, and they won, but anyway, you see the treachery of men's hearts and what can take place. Further in the article, he says, how soon will such a peace settlement come? No one can predict that, but come it must. Here the scriptures are emphatic. There will be a treaty between the New World leader and Israel that will permit Israel to continue and to renew her religious ceremonies through the building of a new Jewish temple and the reactivation of Jewish sacrifices. All of this was anticipated in the prophecies of Daniel 9:27 and 12:11, and was implied in Christ's prophecy about the stopping of the temple's sacrifice when the treaty is broken, Matthew 24:15. And I think that's the verse where Jesus told the Jewish believers at that time, when you see the abomination of desolation in the temple spoken of by Daniel, flee. Anyway, so very interesting look at the future and the false priest, the ultimate false peace treaty that will come with the Antichrist in Israel. Now, let's look at one of the key provocateurs helping to build present instability. And we've talked a lot about President Erdogan of Turkey. This is a article from the Israel My Glory. It's a great Christian magazine on Bible prophecy. And this particular issue is from it's the November-December issue in 2020. Erdogan's move toward an Islamic caliphate. Turkish President Erdogan recently declared that his decision to convert the Church of Hagia Sophia, Istanbul, which I've spoken about in last week's podcast, Istanbul's massive 6th-century Byzantine cathedral into a mosque foreshadows a future pan-Islamic reconquest of Jerusalem. The Hagia Sophia was dedicated to Jesus Christ as the Word or Logos of God and was consecrated in 537 in Constantinople by Byzantine Emperor Justinian the Great. It was the most important church in the Eastern Christian world, Byzantine Empire. And this is talking about Orthodox Christianity, of course, but for nearly 1,000 years until Ottoman Sultan Mehmet II conquered Constantinople in 1453 and turned it into a mosque. After the Ottoman Empire collapsed in 1922, the founder of the secular Turkish Republic, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, and of course I referenced Mr. Atatürk earlier, transformed the Hagia Sophia into a museum in an effort to westernize, in an effort to westernize Turkey. A little bit too much technology for me right now. Sorry about that, folks. On July 24th, exactly 97 years to the day after the signing of the Treaty of Lausanne, in which Turkey gave up all claims to the former Ottoman emperor, Erdogan turned the Hagia Sophia into a mosque, fulfilling long-standing Islamist demands. In a tweet to the non-Muslim world, Erdogan said, Hagia Sophia's doors will be, as is the case with all our mosques, wide open to all, whether they be foreign or local, Muslim or non-Muslim. To the Muslim world, however, he tweeted, the revival of Hagia Sophia is a harbinger of the return of freedom to the mosque. This mosque, of course, stands atop the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And this, of course, is a Muslim mosque. Israeli analyst Ziv Mazel warned that Erdogan's true ambition extends far beyond Turkey. It includes reconstituting the Ottoman Empire and recapturing Jerusalem for Islam. Today, the Turkish leader is uniquely poised to advance his grand design of reviving an Islamic caliphate under his rule. It is no secret that he sees himself as the rightful heir of centuries of Ottoman rulers, and as such, intends to extend anew Turkey's influence over countries and territories formerly part of the Ottoman Empire. Erdogan is downgrading links with Israel to curry favor with the Arab world. He's bent on condemning the Jewish state and mobilizing Turkish aid organizations ostensibly in eastern Jerusalem and restoring Islamic sites. But in fact, he is agitating and inciting against Israel. This serves a dual purpose, Mazel said. Erdogan is positioning Turkey as a defender of Islam and challenging Jordan, which by virtue of its peace agreements, I mentioned earlier, with Israel, has a special status regarding Islamic institutions in the Temple Mount. Israeli analyst David Korn added, Turkey is the most active and important foreign country operating in eastern Jerusalem, adding that Erdogan regards influence in eastern Jerusalem, particularly the Temple Mount, as a major strategic goal. Jordanian professor Nofal, speaking on the Muslim Brotherhood's Yarmouk TV, accused Ataturk of being a crypto-Jew and justified Erdogan's decision to turn Hagia Sophia into a mosque. If we liberate Jerusalem tomorrow, will we leave the Jewish synagogues intact? No, we will uproot them along with their people and throw them into the sea, Allah willing, it will be soon. I would just say good luck with that. Israeli author Nadav Shragai wrote, the president of Turkey, who sees himself as the patron of the Muslim Brotherhood and a knife of the Ottoman Caliphate that will one day return to Jerusalem, has decided to take action to implement his vision of restoring Islam's glory throughout Palestine as a whole and Jerusalem in particular. And now adding to that, the November-December 2020 issue of Barnabas Aid, here's what we read. The second historic Turkish church building to be turned into a mosque. Just a month after his controversial repurposing of the UNESCO World Heritage recognized Hagia Sophia Basilica, Turkish President Erdogan ordered another ancient Christian place of worship to be turned back into a mosque. The presidential decree came on August 21st to transform the Saint Savior in a Kora Church building in Istanbul, now Karayi Museum, which closely mirrors the history of neighboring Hagia Sophia Cathedral. The decision drew criticism from Erdogan's political opponents and church leaders, who said the move will deepen religious divides in the country. I don't think he really cares a whole lot, frankly. Repression of religious minorities is increasing in Muslim-majority Turkey, particularly under Islamist President Erdogan, who has been outspoken about his desire to recreate the Ottoman Empire. And now moving to an article in the Jerusalem Post. this is by Emily Schrader, October 6, 2020. Erdogan's Turkey, drunk on power. Boy, that says it all. Erdogan has made his foreign policy intentions crystal clear in recent years, and the international community would do well to heed the warning. The raging conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan over Nagorno-Karabakh, and I've been talking about that over a series of my podcasts, has given Turkey another opportunity to expand its violent imperialist tendencies under the iron fist of Erdogan. In fact, the sudden outbreak of violence between Armenia and Azerbaijan is more than likely orchestrated in part by Turkey, given the current Turkish regime's increasingly aggressive international policies, from Libya to Syria to Greece to Iraq to Azerbaijan, and yes, even to Israel. Turkey's actions are far beyond acceptable by any standards of international law or morality. As if the bloody civil war in Syria wasn't complicated enough, Turkey took advantage of the chaos in Syria and took aggressive military action beginning as early as 2016 and continues until today, occupying parts of Syria in order to oppress the local Kurdish populations, claiming they were clearing terrorist zones. Multiple independent organizations reported that Turkey carried out ethnic cleansing and other war crimes against local minority populations. Despite this, international bodies and the United States did nothing to hold Turkey accountable. As frequently happens with human rights violators, when they aren't held accountable, Turkey's aggression and war crimes haven't stopped with Syria. In other words, yeah, this frequently happens when human rights violators aren't held accountable. Turkey has also begun to recruit local populations in Syria to fight foreign wars in Libya. Of course, Libya is another member of the coalition in Ezekiel 38 and 39 that will attempt to invade Israel. Another brewing violent conflict in which Turkey is meddling, and there also reports of Ankara recruiting Syrians to fight against Armenia as well. Most recently, Turkish involvement expanded to Azerbaijan as Turkey is backing the violence against Armenia in Nagorno-Karabakh. Turkey has repeatedly bombed Kurdish areas in northern Iraq and is regularly threatening Greece over maritime access to gas exploration. We've talked a lot about that in the past. Its military invasion in Libya and enhanced ties with the war-torn nation have also led to increased tensions with Cyprus and Israel over the East Med energy deal. Turkey has been on the literal warpath, and no one seems to be paying attention. Meanwhile, Erdogan's interests are expanding to Israel. Erdogan is a longtime supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood and has routinely aligned himself with Muslim Brotherhood supporting nations such as Qatar. He has provided support to Hamas terrorists repeatedly, including welcoming them to Turkey and even granting them citizenship. Within Turkey as well, Erdogan has brutally oppressed political dissidents and aided in the Islamization of historic sites such as turning the Hagia Sophia into a mosque. Unsurprisingly, in response to the United Arab Emirates and Bahraini peace deals, Turkey sided against the Arab world and publicly condemned peace, siding with some of the world's worst human rights abusers, Iran, Qatar, and Palestinian leaders. Despite being allies of Hamas, earlier this month, Erdogan shared a bizarre tweet glorifying Ottoman control over the city of Jerusalem that stated, "Jerusalem is ours," and claiming the Ottomans lived with the Palestinian people for centuries. Ironic, considering the bloody history of the Ottomans in fighting against the local Arab population in order to control the city of Jerusalem. You know, I think about what God says, you know, when he says the nations are like a drop in the bucket. You know, and some of these madmen, despots, don't realize, you know, the trifling that they're doing. We know that whoever's leading Turkey in Ezekiel 38 invasion, he's going to come in with a bang and go out with a whimper, I can assure you. Now, to finish the article, while Israel's position is extremely complex in dealing with Azerbaijan and Armenia due to alliances against Iran, Israel, too, should be very careful in aligning itself with Azerbaijan and, as such, Turkey. In this conflict, we should not ignore Erdogan's aggression. We must hold Turkey accountable and put an end to its meddling in the region. Yeah, good luck with that. Aggression really is his middle name, as we see time and time again. I have a short... Let me just finish this article from Israel Hayyam, 10-2-2020. Erdogan, Jerusalem is our city. Turkish President Erdogan on Thursday asserted before his parliament that the country has a claim to Jerusalem, alluding to the time of the Ottoman Empire's control over the region. He believes Turkey has a claim to everything, as was my comments, quite the provocative guy. The Ottoman Empire ruled Jerusalem and much of the Middle East from about 1516 to 1917 after World War I. In this city that we had to leave in tears during the First World War, it is still possible to come across traces of the Ottoman resistance. So you get his drift. He's claiming, of course, that this is Turkey's, belongs to Turkey. Please join with us next week. God bless you all. Good night.